This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Happy Tuesday to everybody out there. Hopefully everybody's having a good day. Hopefully the Mariners will contribute to your good day. They will be in action in Game 2 of their series with the Toronto Blue Jays coming up. We will turn you over to the pregame show at 3 o'clock. So a very short show today. We've got our guy Mike Blowers joining us at 2:30 for his weekly conversation. We will demand answers of Mike Blowers at 2:30 and see if he can make anybody feel better about what's going on with the Mariner team right now. And that's an hour full of therapy is what it's going to be, Dave.
Yeah, it looks like it. Now, I'm not on social media. I'm not sure if you knew that, Bob, but I haven't seen all of the outrage and the panic and things like that. I've just kind of watched the postgame show and things like that. But, you know, that's gets harder and harder to sell, right? When it's like, okay, we're only in the third quarter of the first game of an NFL season, so let's calm down. But when you see Castillo, especially, I felt like, you know, he's probably the big reason why people are panicking.
I'd say he's part of it, certainly. Yeah, the pitching over, he's not alone. We talked about it yesterday, Dave, that everybody's sort of taking turns, except for him, obviously, of having a really good game and then a dud. And then Emerson Hancock, a little different. You know, he gets called into action late. He has a very good game based on expectations, but he gave up 3 runs and 5 1/3, and then his next game he got destroyed. So the pitching as a whole, for me, is more like, all right, when are we going to – this is, I still believe, one of the best 1-5 rotations in all of baseball. They haven't pitched that way, and that includes Luis, who, you know, if you go back to his final 2 starts of last season, you haven't gotten that ace performance from him, and he's your ace. He's your guy. He's the rock, as Service loves to say, and he's the guy that if the playoffs started today, he'd be the guy they would roll out there, and he hasn't pitched that way. He hasn't been brutal all year, but he hasn't been the ace. The furthest he's gone is 5 2/3 against Cleveland. He's given up 4 runs in all 3 of his starts. He doesn't have the efficiency that he's had. He hasn't been that guy, and you need him to be that guy. That's just how it goes. You need him. You need the offense. You got multiple storylines. It's not just the pitching or just the defense. It's kind of everything all together, which leads to that frustration from the fan base, which I get, whether we're on Twitter, whether it's on our text line, which is there for you at 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. Fans are frustrated, and I get it. I don't blame anybody for being frustrated. It is the players are frustrated. So it's not even so much about last night's game. That was just sort of reconfirming what some believe, that, oh, this is not a good team. They're striking out a ton still. They had more strikeouts than hits last night. It's just sort of reinforcing the negative beliefs that some have about the team.
Well, I mean, look, I get it if it was just all about hitting. If your pitching staff was going out there and just crushing it, you know, you'd be okay. You'd be like, okay, well, this is kind of what happens when you don't have, you know, the offense, and, you know, it's going to take a while for that to get going. I always talk about hitters with warmer weather and things like that. But, yeah, the pitching staff, I mean, I was looking at Castillo. I mean, last year he gave up a little bit less than 5 hits a game, and he's up to more than 8 hits a game, and that's your ace. So, you know, and same thing with Kirby. I mean, that also kind of, until you see him, which we're going to see him tonight, you're wondering which Kirby is he this year. I mean, he started off fantastic with that first outing against Cleveland, but then, you know, he comes out and just has a horrible game. I'm sorry, Boston, and then comes out with a horrible game against Cleveland. And you're going, oh man, this is like the strength of our team. I know for me, I've been saying, hey, it's all about defense and pitching for this team. And, you know, you hope that the offense comes around. But when you see, you know, your ace just not himself. Now, and like we'll talk about with Blowers, I mean, there was the one, you know, the one hit that I think it was Schneider. There was a 2 RBI hit, you know, into right. He just barely, I mean, it was like 6 inches off the plate or off the strike zone anyway. And actually CB Buckner probably would have called that a strike, but yeah, I mean, he just barely throws the bat at it, goes into right center and 2-run score. So, I mean, he doesn't even have room. I mean, every pitcher, you know, knows that big league hitters are going to hit stuff that's off the plate, but you know, if that happens, but then also, you know, you're leaving a few in the middle, now all of a sudden it's a problem. So yeah, that's, there is, and somebody was saying certainly not about defense with this team. Well, going in, they look pretty good as far as spring training and everything goes and what we know about these guys from last year. And yeah, it hasn't been great defensively either.
No, and you're right about that, you know, little flare in the center field. It's just, you know, it's in no man's land. He just reaches out and flips the bat at it. I guess the counter to that is, how did the two guys that scored get on base?
Right, right.
So, you know, listen, anybody who wants to, and I know there's some, really just one, who wants to tell you that he's pitching like an ace and this is all circumstances around him that he's not in control of. He's not. He's not pitching like an ace. Those are the facts. No, you can use whatever stat you want to twist to tell me otherwise. I think everybody can see, dating back to last year, the final two starts of the season. I mean, he pitches against Houston on the 25th of September. 6 innings, 8 hits, 5 runs, gives up 2 home runs. And then on the 30th of September against Texas, he lasts 2 2/3, gives up 5 hits, 4 runs, 5 walks. It's his last 5 starts that we've seen from him where he hasn't been the ace. And you need him to be that guy. And Scott Servais in this cut here after the game just talked about what he needs to happen for Castillo to get back to being that guy on the mound.
Well, the first thing you look at is his stuff. His stuff is good. He's healthy, you know. So then, you know, where is it? You know, is it just not, you know, understanding? You know, you got to, you know, cut the plate in half or maybe in thirds. You know, just get the ball where it needs to go, especially when you're had an account like that against really good hitters. I mean, these guys are going to put the ball in play, but you got to make them put your pitch in play in the right spot, and we're not doing that.
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple things I want to get to from Scott here, because he kind of touches on all of it, and he talks about the importance of, again, Castillo, who is your guy. He is at the top of one of the best rotations in all of baseball. He's got to be that guy. And he talked about it here in cut two, you know, how important it is to get him back, that he can't make some of the mistakes. Yeah, that pitch in particular, guy made a put a swing on it, just wounded duck into center field with nothing you can do there, but he's missing over the middle of the plate. And Scott talks about that here.
I think anybody that's got their top of the rotation guy that is struggling like that, you need him back. You know, there's no question about it. He's certainly capable of doing that. You know, it's just got to be a little bit more fine when you are ahead like that. You can't miss in the middle of the plate against, you know, premier hitters.
Yeah, so it's
the other thing, as I think coming in, is that, you know, their right-handed pitching or hitting was not good. You know, they were all under 200 and kind of scuffling and thinking, okay, this would be a great opportunity. I talked about it yesterday, the numbers that Bill Krueger brought up, and you know, that maybe it was a chance for Luis to get healthy against right-handed pitching and hitting, and just didn't happen. So yeah, that was the other discouraging thing.
7 of the 9 hits were to right-handers.
Yeah,
so that reverted in a very big way in this game, and then
probably
Scott
should have seen that coming.
Yeah, you knew he was going to give up a hit to a righty at some point. It just, yeah, you didn't want it to be 7 in the same game. Okay. Servais talked. He was on with Brock and Salk this morning. Talked about what he's seen from Castillo so far this year.
The quality of the pitches, you know, whether it's fastball, velocity, or movement, the slider, the changeup, they're all about the same is what we've seen in the past. It really comes down to execution. And, you know, we saw it last night. You know, there's certain times he would get ahead in the count and all of a sudden the ball leaks back over the plate, in the middle of the plate. It's not a quality, you know, 0-2, 1-2, 2-2 pitch. There are some other ones he threw off the plate and Schneider kind of reaches the bat out and pokes a single into right field. But I think the execution and kind of like, and we've seen this from Luis. That's why he's just been such a special pitcher for so long. When he gets somebody 2 strikes and he gets up on top of them, mm-hmm. He buries them. He kills them. And we haven't seen his ability to do that. Just hasn't been as consistent, and it's hurt him.
Yeah, so he's, again, this is fresh off of his appearance, but he's far from the only problem this team has. It's the entire rotation, as we talked about. It's taking turns. Good start, lousy start. We'll see if Kirby can get that corrected tonight. But then you look at the offense, Dave. I mean, 7 hits, 2 runs, 10 strikeouts, and 5 of those 7 hits came from 2 guys. Ty France, which is great. Ty France, everybody was turned on him from last season. He goes 3 for 4. He's hitting .379 right now. Canzone had 2 of the hits. He goes 2 for 4, but he was also responsible for 2 of the strikeouts. You saw Cal and JP each with a solo home run, which hopefully is going to be a catalyst to seeing more consistency out of those guys, because it's been pretty much the entire lineup outside of Ty France and Josh Rojas, and then to a smaller extent Haniger, but he's struggled a bit. So yeah, I mean, your whole lineup is kind of scuffling.
Yeah, well, and then, you know, not, I would pose the question, I mean, who needs to get going the most? I mean, is it Julio?
Yes.
Or is it Polanco or JP? Now, JP, I mean, that home run he hit the other night was pretty amazing. But, you know, he's kind of scuffling a little bit. I mean, he started off very slow. So, you know, but you think it's Julio? I would not disagree. You keep forgetting that you signed that guy to a huge contract that goes on for forever, and that he's going to be the face of this team. And so, yeah, he needs to be the one guy that, hey, he's not scuffling. But right now it looks like, as far as last night anyway, Ty France, and coming back after the, you know, the paternity leave and all that, and kind of cool for him, having a good night. But yeah, you look at Polanco and JP and Julio, those guys got to get it going.
Yeah, everybody does. You can't. There's no, much like the rotation. It's just, again, we're talking about Luis because he pitched last night. We'll talk about Kirby tomorrow because he'll pitch tonight. Right. And Gilbert will have pitched by the time we're on the air after the game tomorrow. So we'll have 2 other guys to talk about. But this is just fresh off of your ace. Like, once again, not looking like your ace. The offense is not anywhere close to where it needs to be. So we'll see. If they can win these next two, this one from last night, you kind of go, okay. All right, they won the series. They just win a series. You got to do that. They haven't done that yet. They split the Red Sox series. They lose to Cleveland, and then they lose to the Brewers. You got to win the series. So yeah, Hopefully it begins tonight.
Boy, we got some. I'd like to keep track of some of these people that are texting in right now. The 425. You homers were buying into what Passan and, you know, Morosi said, and blah blah blah. I'm like, all right. I can't sit here and say it's early. That's the reason why. But, geez, you talk about jumping ship early. Holy moly.
Yeah, well, then don't watch. I mean, I don't know what to tell you, man. It's 11 games in. If you want to bail on it, then okay. Help yourself. I don't blame that guy or girl, whoever it was. I didn't see the text. But be mad. I don't. I'm with you. I'm watching these games in front of the TV. Bleepity bleep. Come on. I'm doing the same thing. But after you cool off, you put it into perspective and say, all right, let's see what they're going to do. How are they going to respond? Yeah. And we'll find out this afternoon. Meanwhile, you had the Fighting Lefkos took a beating last night, Dave, in the NCAA championship game, which I didn't watch.
Oh, boy.
Is that the UConn song or is that the Purdue song? Which one is that?
Oh, whoops, it's the UConn song. Oh, uh-oh. My bad.
I'm glad you're playing that before Lefko gets back in the building. Otherwise, there could be repercussions.
Otherwise, that would have been going too far.
Yeah, that could cross the line, Dave.
Yeah. The line. That's the word I'm looking for.
I didn't see I was watching the Mariner game, so I would flip back to the to the basketball game on commercial breaks, and then the second half I watched, which was kind of a dud. I mean, they lost by 15. It wasn't compelling. Yeah. It wasn't what I was. We talked about it yesterday. Just give us a good game. Just give us a good game, and it wasn't.
Yeah, and I kept thinking Purdue was going to get back into it. I was listening to Danny Hurley, the head coach for the for UConn, and he was talking about how basically he wasn't saying that they just let Edie do whatever he wanted. I mean, guy had 37 points and 10 rebounds. He averages 25 and 12. But, I mean, he played practically every minute of that game. But, you know, you look at what, you know, what Purdue got off their bench. They got 2 points off of their bench. They have a guard, Fletcher Lawyer, who's averaging 10 points, played 30 minutes, 0 for 6. Not even a free throw You know, Braden Smith was okay. Lance Jones is one of their starters. He had 12 points, you know, he only had five. But, I mean, if you look at the minutes off the bench, 55 minutes for Purdue, only 26 minutes for UConn, and UConn got 13. Purdue got 2. So, really, it was, you know, you got to say Fletcher Loyer, and I think that they really – you know, they were thinking, hey, we're gonna guard everybody else, and, you know, we're going to let Edie do whatever he does. And he had some amazing, like, there was a series where he had 2 rejections in a row, and then they get the ball, go down, and score. And then he was working, you know, his magic with his jump hook, both left-handed, right-handed, anything. I mean, he's very creative, really good. But then, you know, he got no support from the rest of the team. UConn, much more, you know, much more balanced, and the stuff they got off their bench, it was just, yeah, they ran away with it in the end.
Yeah, kind of a bummer, man. I didn't really care who won. I mean, I picked UConn in my bracket, but I wasn't going to win, so I didn't really care. I just wanted a good game, which, again, unfortunately, it just wasn't.
It's funny, watching that game, the first half, you know, I was like, wow, this is going back and forth. It's a really good game. This game is wild, you know. And then, you know, it got in the second half, and you're like, oh, they'll come back. They'll make it back, and they just never did. So it was kind of 15 first points. Half game.
Yeah, and then Matt put here on the sheet, the show sheet, final bracket update. Brock Huard is the winner with 1,340 points. Apparently, I came in third with 12. Who was in second?
Our very own Taylor Jacobs came in second. Congratulations, Taylor.
Congrats to Taylor. So, yeah, Brock 1, Taylor 2, I came in 3rd, Lefko placed 13th, and he called it the burden of tremendous knowledge.
Yeah, he knew too much.
Yeah, he's way too knowledgeable.
The man who knew too much.
13th, he barely edged out Creighton Barrel, finishing 15th with 320 points. By the way, a reminder, there were 15 people that submitted picks. So Creighton Barrel, which is our very own Matt Nelson, occupying 15.
He picked it's that great one disappointment because of, to us all.
Because of the catalog.
Exactly. Yes.
Just like Buffalo because of the
for
wings.
The wings. Yeah. It's awesome. I just love that Lefko barely squeaked past Matt in this whole thing.
Matt, awesome. My hope going into this bracket was that I was going to beat one person. And unfortunately, that did not happen. Maybe next year, boys.
You were close. You were close. But congrats to Brock. Congrats to UConn. Back-to-back titles since Florida did it in the early, 2007 and 8, I believe they did that. So, yeah congrats to UConn on back-to-back titles now. Hurley talking about going for 3 in a row. We'll see what they do. Right now, let's take 2.
The women's NCAA championship game had an audience average of 18.7 million people, making it the most watched basketball game since 2019. According to Nielsen, the audience peaked at 24 million.
It's a crazy number. Most watched basketball game, not just women's game, since 2019. And that game was compelling. It got down to, 5 points toward the end, last 3 minutes or 2 minutes, and it's kind of back and forth. So at least that one, just regardless of who you were rooting for, gave you a reason to sit there and watch it play out.
I would say there wasn't anything necessarily from the women's game that was better than the first half. But if you look at the game as a whole, that was a very entertaining game. South Carolina with Dawn Staley and then you had Caitlin Clark, those two kind of heroes, and the sort of stories kind of built around them, and I think they were more compelling than on the men's side. But we're not comparing. But I thought it was more enjoyable to watch. There were some amazing plays, you know, that you saw. This kid Cameron Heide is a freshman. He had that dunk where he comes in, his elbow. You know, you're not going to see that in the women's game. But what you're going to see is really good execution and passing and assists and things like that. So I thought both of them were just an absolute win.
What did he do with his elbow?
Who?
You said something about he came in and his elbow.
Yeah, he got like a rebound dunk where, yeah, like his elbow was at the rim.
Oh, okay. I thought he elbowed somebody.
The rim. Yeah, and then just hammers it home, and the guy's a freshman. So, I mean, there was, you know, that's just kind of a contrast of that versus, you know, when you see a really good pick and roll or a great pass, it typically happens in the women's game.
Everyone's favorite bank robbing superfan, Xavier Babudar, a.k.a. Chiefsaholic, has been ordered to pay over $10 million to a teller he threatened with a gun back in December of 2022.
And the chances she gets a dollar, I would say, are probably zero. This, I was reading this story, Dave, and apparently as he was robbing banks, he was living in a car. This is not a guy who was living in the lap of luxury, even though he's going to games. I don't know if he's got any of the money that he stole left. I don't know if he could actually pay fines with stolen money. So I'm going to guess, despite what looks like a very one-sided judgment and this person's got millions coming their way, they probably don't have anything.
No, well, and then I think the judge also said something about him not being able to profit for having been a bank robber. So, you know, if say he was thinking about doing some kind of a, you know, Netflix series or something like that,
or
he gets nothing.
Yeah.
Or a book or whatever. Yeah, he gets nothing. So, yeah, I seriously doubt that this this woman that he threatened with a gun is going to be paid back a dime.
All right. Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/CyberKnifeProstate. Time to talk about the Mariners with an actual expert. Mike Blowers will join us for his weekly conversation. That is coming up next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
It's time.
He really moved the ball around today. That was a lot of fun to watch.
For Seattle's best baseball analyst, Mike Blowers.
The 1-1 pitch to Blowers. Swung on and belted deep to center field. To the track. The wall. Fly away.
With Wyman and Bob.
Well, we do it every week during the baseball season. We always look forward to this conversation with the best in the business, the color analyst for your Seattle Mariners, with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. He is Mike Blowers. Blow, how are you, man?
I'm doing good, Bob. How are you?
We're good. We're trying to, running a little bit of a therapy clinic here, Dave and I, trying to keep Mariner fans relaxed. It's 11 games. But at some point when you watch a team not do a bunch of things well, even though it's early, it's still concerning. It can be disturbing, stressful, what have you. As a guy that went through this, you played the game for a long time. When you watch what's happening through 11 games, is there anything that you look at and go, ugh? Hey, I'm not sure what's happening there. They better get that fixed. Anything standing out to you above just, hey, it's a slow start?
I think that the one thing that is a bit concerning, and it's something that Scott talked about yesterday, is the offense as far as the team goes. Had a tough time generating anything. They've been up against some pretty good pitching. I'll say that. Barrios was really good last night. But at some point you have to get that going, because I feel confident that the rotation is going to be just fine. The bullpen is in pretty good shape overall, so I don't worry about those things. Their defense, they started to clean that up, which has been good to see. But offensively, I'm not sure what the identity of this team is quite yet, so we just have to wait it out and see how many ABs it takes for these guys to get things going. They have a couple guys that are hitting well. It's nice to have Ty France back and get three more hits last night. So Ty's been swinging it well. I think Rojas has done a nice job also at the bottom of the lineup. But they need to get everybody going from the top of the lineup to the middle of the lineup. And then I think things will change, because it's not – I don't think it's going to be a situation, when we've seen this before, where they're going to have to go out and score five runs every game because their pitching is so good. But you got to get it going. And there's a bunch of guys that are off to a slow start right now.
Hey, Mike, last night Castillo throws a 82-mile-an-hour pitch. It's like 5 or 6 inches off the plate, and Schneider just kind of throws his bat, pokes it out into right field. It's two RBIs. I mean, has it more been things like that for Luis Castillo, or what's your level of concern? What do you think's going wrong with him right now?
I'm not concerned, because his stuff is what we're used to seeing, right? He was 96, 97 with some run on his fastball last night. I thought he had a pretty good slider. The changeup was all right. For me last night, but it just seems like it's just that one inning for him that gets away. And the problem, part of it has been what you talked about, right? I mean, he threw a pretty good slider that would get most people out and ended up dumping it in the outfield for a couple of RBIs, so that certainly hurt him, because he made the pitch that he wanted to. But big league hitters sometimes will get hits on pitches that are out of the strike zone, and that's what happened there. But if his stuff wasn't there, I'd be concerned. But his stuff is there. He just has to stay out of the middle of the plate. We talked about it before the game in our open on TV. And one of the things I did is I think it was three different at-bats on his fastball with a lot of run to it at 97 miles an hour. But they were running right back to the middle of the plate. You could see Cal set up on the inside corner, which I think is, you know, situations, those are the right pitches for him with his fastball. He's always going to be heavier fastball anyway. But then he doesn't quite start it off the plate to run it back to the corner, starting middle in and running out to the middle of the plate, and that's where the barrel is, right? So he's had some of that going on too.
Mike, we always hear the old adage, hitting is contagious. Do you think not hitting can be contagious in that this team is very aware that, you know, offensively they've struggled. They've not been a great offensive team for a number of years, and they obviously are more aware than anybody. They're off to a slow start, so maybe each guy is putting more pressure on themselves when they get up there, like, all right, I gotta come through. I got to do something here that maybe everybody's pressing more than they otherwise would when you've got basically a whole lineup outside of two guys struggling.
I think that to a man, they're aware that they've struggled offensively, but I think it didn't, so as a team. And then after that, I think it's each individual battle. These guys trying to figure something out, trying to make some changes, trying to make some things happen. They're not a team, I think, that's going to hit a lot of home runs, so they're going to have to put the ball in play, and they've had a tough time with that. Like I mentioned before, they've also had some pretty good pitching going up against them. I think one of the hard things early in the season is making adjustments to the breaking ball and off-speed pitches. They can all time up a fastball, but they've seen a ton of that. That's the scouting report on them right now. So you see some signs of these guys starting to turn things around. A couple of sliders that have been hit out of the ballpark. It was nice to see these guys are staying on it, but I think more than anything, these guys are just having their own individual battles.
Hey, Mike, since we talked to you last, we had a conversation with Josh Rojas, and he's made a beautiful play last night. He's batting 333, three RBIs. What are you hearing when you talk to him? And I don't know how much you've visited with him, but are you hearing the right things come out of his mouth as far as the way that he's talking about how his career and this season is developing?
It just seems really loose to me, Dave. You know, I mean, it doesn't seem to affect him at all. And I think when you don't know if you're going to play on a daily basis when you come to the ballpark, that can be a difficult thing, but he seems to handle that just fine. I had to laugh yesterday. I was standing down on the field with Aaron, and Aaron asked him about that 40-mile-per-hour pitch. We want to talk about that more than a sitting. So, you know, he was good-natured about it. He was laughing. In fact, he told Aaron, he said that he noticed that the hitter actually moved up in the box on him, and that's why he threw it as slow as possible because he knew he didn't like the slow stuff. So, but we laughed about that. But he seems like just a good guy, and he works hard every day. I watch him out here with Perry in the field. Perry seems to be happy with him. I spoke to Perry yesterday. So we'll see where it goes from here. But the good news is he's off to a good start, and I think that's important when you're new to a team and you're not sure what your playing time is going to be. I think that helps you out a lot.
Mike, when you talk about this team trying to figure out their identity at the plate, what for the fans out there listening, what does that mean literally? Like, is that each individual saying, all right, I'm not a home run hitter, so now I need to just be a guy who puts the ball in play and tries to drive it? Or we as a group need to be more disciplined and not chase? Or what does that mean when you talk about them finding their identity?
Well, I think it can mean a lot of things. You know, like we look at last year's team, they hit the ball out of the ballpark, but they struck out a lot. We knew what they were, and that's what you were going to get on a nightly basis. The good news with it is they may strike out, but they can also get you three runs real quick. This team is a team that's going to have to bunch hits together, and I think put pressure on the defense by putting the ball in play, and that's something that Scott talked about in spring training. That's something that the players talked about. But they're all different in the way that they go about their business and what the expectations of them are. But I think that's the way that they're going to have to go about it. They're going to have to find a way to get the ball in play more often and not have the double-digit strikeouts, which, you know, is not an easy thing, I don't think, in today's game with the way the pitching is. But they're going to have to get there.
Hey, Mike, George Kirby going tonight. Obviously didn't have the outing that he wanted to have last week, but tell us a little bit about his personality and like how he handles things like that. I think he's kind of a different guy, which is fine. You know, you got all kinds of different personalities on a team, but you know, how do you think that will sort of enable him to come back from that bad performance last week?
He's quiet, but he's super competitive. I can tell you that, and I think that, you know, if you go back and I was on the bus over to the ballpark today, and I got a note from Pike Parker saying, you know, if you look at his last start, and I made the comment a couple of times in that game, it just seemed like everything that they put in play turned into a hit. And that's a tough way to go, because if you go back to it, 95 miles an hour plus in that game, there were only four hits that way. That's it. And the rest of them were grounders and flares and all the other stuff. So I think he'll bounce back from it just fine. The good news with George is he throws strikes. You know that. He has terrific stuff. He knows how to pitch. And I think it was just one of those days, and that's what he'll chalk it up to.
Hey, Mike, we see a day like yesterday where Julio, he doesn't come up with a big hit, but he squares the ball up. He had a ball that was over 114 miles an hour that he hit at somebody. Saw him smiling in the dugout, which for me as a fan was sort of a relief, because I could see frustration of, man, I squared that thing up and I'm hitting it right at people. It's just not happening for me. Is that something as a pro that you almost take as well as a hit? Like, man, I this is going to drop at some point, and I'm seeing it. I'm on time. How do you view that when you see a guy who's not, the hits aren't falling, but you're looking at that exit velocity?
Well, I think they'll definitely look at that. You know, you go back to the dugout, and everybody will say something to you in a positive note, even though you didn't get a hit. And all these guys obviously want to get as many hits as possible, and they want them right now. But the game just doesn't work that way. There is an element of luck involved in this game, and that ball, he hit it right at Kiermaier in center field. There's nothing else you can do in that AB because you can't hit it much harder than that. So, you know, to me, I think for the guys, and it's so early right now that they're not too concerned about it. After a while, if these things keep happening and you have over 100 at-bats and you're still grinding away at it, at that point, you want to see yourself get some hits, and you don't care what they look like. I mean, that's just the nature of the game. But I think for right now where they're at, my thing is Julio had a couple of hits in Milwaukee, came back with a hit the next day, and then, you know, you mentioned him hitting the ball hard a couple of times last night. That's just that to me is the start of him trying to, you know, get himself back together. And the one thing that, you know, we all want to hear is or see is him hit the ball in the air a little bit more, and he's starting to do that too. So that's a good sign also.
Mike, I'm always fascinated by the relationship with the umpires. And last night, C.B. Buckner takes one off the chin. And you see, you know, Cal helping him up and everything. And everybody seemed very concerned, whereas most of the time people are complaining about his strikes and some of the calls that he makes. But I thought that was kind of interesting, you know, just seeing the sort of compassion from Cal. And in the end, you know, you're all in it together out there, right?
I think it's that way in the game across the board. Nobody wants to see anybody get hurt or something happen. Even though you're competing and you know, you want to do the best job you can, when something like that happens, everybody is concerned about it, regardless of what you think, you know, on the way to the ballpark. If you like CB and you think, man, the strike zone is going to be all over the place, that's one way. But when you see him get hit in the chin like that, and that was pretty tough, everybody's concerned about it because you just don't want to see it. Same thing as when you're hitting and you hit one right back at the pitcher and you square them up. Nobody wants to see that happen.
Hey, Mike, last one before we let you go. Just a quick thought in general. We're seeing all these. The big topic is the injuries to pitchers, and everybody's speculating as to what the cause is. And it seems like there's a natural inclination to go, well, it's the pitch clock. I mean, those 2 extra seconds are leading to this, yet the data shows the injuries were happening before the adjustment to the pitch clock. I'm sure it doesn't help, but is there something you look at? Is it just more about guys trying to put 100% into every pitch now? It's a different philosophy, or do you think the pitch clock is having more of an impact than we're giving credit for?
I don't think it's the pitch clock, to be honest with you. All the pitchers that I've talked to, they like it. And I mean, I haven't heard one person complain about it. So they think they feel like they are ready to go. I think it's more to the point that these guys are throwing 95 to 100 miles an hour. I think these guys are constantly tinkering with their off-speed pitches, and they're going from a slider to a sweeper to now they're throwing splits and all this other stuff, and their arm and their body just isn't used to all of that, and they're throwing more breaking balls than they did in the past, even though they can throw 100 miles an hour. And I think all that, you know, kind of takes a toll on your arm, and you're going to see some injuries from it. But I think that also these guys are really fortunate in that the medical staff can get them back right fairly quickly, and if they need surgery, usually these guys come back even better from that. So, you know, but you're always going to have injuries to pitching. I mean, throwing a baseball the way these guys do it is incredible, but there's a lot of toll on your arm when you're doing that.
He is Mike Blowers. He's with us each and every week during the Major League Baseball season. Always a fun conversation. Thanks so much, Mike. Have fun out there. Hopefully we're talking to you next week about a winning streak.
Good talking to you guys. Thanks.
There you go. There's Mike Blowers with us each and every week. Coming up, a solar eclipse took over the world yesterday. So let's look at some of the athletes who have eclipsed their sports. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We'll turn you over to the Mariners pregame show in a few moments, but in honor of the solar eclipse that took place yesterday, Dave, you heard something from Colin Cowherd that caught your ear?
My favorite. Yeah, my favorite guy. He was talking about just different athletes that have eclipsed their sport, meaning they're just above and beyond everybody else. And I think that, you know, the main thing, obviously, because of the eclipse, but also he had Caitlin Clark in there in college basketball, which... Right now, I mean, we're going to see from here on out, you know, what effect she has. Does she Does it up the attendance at WNBA games and women's basketball and things like that? I mean, it's still fairly early, but yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing that that she has made such an impact. But, you know, and also talking about like Mike Tyson, you know, with boxing, Shaun White with snowboarding, Usain Bolt track, Lance Armstrong cycling, you know, Michael Phelps swimming, things like that. And you know, a couple of things were they didn't have number one. The number one guy was Michael Jordan, as far as someone who has eclipsed their sport. And Tiger Woods was second, Wayne Gretzky third. So, but no football guys on there. But yeah, I just I had not thought about it in that way. And you know, when you look at some of these names, like, yeah, they're household names. And like Shaun White, I was like, oh, yeah, that's right. He was a snowboarder. But he mostly, like, made money in video games. So, yeah, I didn't see any football players, but I was wondering, you know, if there was a football player, who would that be?
Tom Brady.
You think?
Yeah. He's been in movies. He's had cameos. He's, you know, he's got his products. He's got his TB12. He's endorsing Uggs. He's... Yeah, I mean, if we're just talking about living athletes, I, you know, if you're talking about any and all, there's this list looks different because my number one would be Muhammad Ali.
Yeah,
but
Pele.
But if we're talking about just who's out there today, it's hard to argue with Jordan and Tiger Woods as one and two. And if I'm going football player that's alive, I think everybody know because he was married to a supermodel, and it was just, you know, their marriage was such a big deal. And I don't know, did they have a reality show? I can't even remember. But I feel like Brady's transcended just being a football player. People that never watched him play football know who Tom Brady is.
Yeah. Yeah, and then some of the other, you know, names I brought up. But, like, you know, look, there's lots of players on a team, you know, a baseball team or a football team. And so mostly these are individual sports, right? Other than Wayne Gretzky, you know, you got, and Michael Jordan, there's five on the floor. But you got Tiger Woods and... you know, Mike Tyson, all those names. But yeah, I don't know. I thought the timing was right, maybe Jim Brown. You know, I mean, if he was as, you know, what he meant to football then, you know, if he was that kind of player now with the internet and video games and all that stuff, maybe it's Jim Brown.
Yeah, Mahomes is kind of on his way to that too. I mean, he's as much a pitch man as he is a quarterback. He's winning Super Bowls. He's got a tremendous amount of success, and he's in all these TV commercials left and right. So I don't know. He's working on it. He's definitely following in the footsteps of Brady. That's for sure.
Matt adds George Foreman because of the George Foreman grill.
That's right.
And also Kelsey Brothers because one is dating Taylor Swift and the other was on It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. So those are Matt Nelson's okay. little contributions there.
Of course. That's perfect. All right. That's going to do it for us. We got Mariner baseball coming your way, the pregame show. Mariners game two with their series in Toronto. Hopefully we're talking about a win or a couple of wins tomorrow. We'll be on after tomorrow's matinee game. So it'll be Wyman and Bob right here, Seattle Sports on 710.